containment bills.
Aye.
Vince, pull them up.
House Committee on Revenue for June 6, 2017 will come to order.
Two gavels.
Colleagues, we will open the public hearing on House Bill 3459. Kyle, are you going to give us an introduction?
Yeah.
How are you on the work?
Okay, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3459 is a bill that would expand an existing property tax exemption that's available under ORS 307-130. And it would be expanded to include all the real and personal property of a retail store that's owned by a nonprofit corporation if the retail store deals exclusively in donated inventory. And the only two employees, if you will, of the retail store could be a manager and a bookkeeper, and otherwise the individuals who work at the retail store are required to be volunteers. It does require all the net proceeds of the retail store sales to be donated to an animal shelter, an entity that provides spaying or neutering services for pets of low-income individuals or households, or to assist low-income households in obtaining veterinary care for pets. There are a number of other changes within the measure related to 307-130 statute that are legislative council changes that are unrelated to, they're just moving the definitions around really.
Stylistic.
Yes, exactly, Mr. Chair.
Modernization, as it were.
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Gomberg, thank you for coming to Revenue today.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for sharing a part of this remarkable day with me. For your record, I am David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon coast, and I appreciate you hearing House Bill 3459. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that's intended to benefit our public and nonprofit animal shelters. Public, as in those who are operated by counties. In my own Lincoln County, the annual budget over $500,000 to take care of animals that have been abandoned or surrendered. But nonprofit, as in the Oregon Humane Society, with an annual operating budget of roughly $10 million, again, to take care of services that might otherwise need to be provided by public entities. So what's going on here? And that is that across Oregon, there are nonprofit thrift stores that raise funds to support animal causes, in particular to support, as I said, public or nonprofit animal shelters. And when they operate these stores, some of them rent their property and some of them endeavor to purchase property. And there is an Oregon Department of Revenue guideline sheet which talks about property tax exemptions for specified organizations. And just for purposes of your record, I'm referring to document 150-310-664 revised in January of 2014. And what this says is that organizations are exempt from property taxes if the charitable activity for the direct good or benefit of the community or public at large, or if the charitable activity is relieving a government burden. So we've got a document, a set of guidelines that assessors look at that says if you're doing something to benefit the public or relieving government of expenses, that you can be property tax exempt. But what we have discovered as several assessors have dug deeper into the situation is that the guideline document doesn't reflect accurately what is in the state statute, because the state statute says if you're doing good work and for the benefit of people, then you can get the tax exemption. But we've got organizations that had gone out and made decisions to invest in property and to raise money for animal shelters, and now they're finding after they have made that investment and purchased that property that that they in fact did not qualify for the tax exemption that they thought they had based on these guidelines. So we took a look at that situation and brought you House Bill 3459. And there are a number of editorial changes that were offered by good counsel. But the salient portion of that simply indicates that in addition to helping people, you can also help animals and qualify for property tax relief. Now, Mr. Chairman, I know that you like to see such opportunities very narrowly focused, and that is the purpose of the Dash 1 amendments.
Which we haven't seen.
Are these not posted yet?
No,
I didn't see them.
Okay. Well, I will have to remedy that very quickly. But I can tell you that that they narrow the application to organizations where at least 75% of the staff people and staff hours committed are done by volunteers, that the proceeds go to animal shelters or to nonprofit corporations that are dedicated to supporting animals or dealing with emergency activities that support animals that are in distress, such as in floods or unusual snowfall or God forbid an earthquake or tsunami. So we have a narrowly focused amendment, the dash ones, and I thought that had been posted to OLS, but apparently it has not. Mr. Chairman, what else can I tell you about House Bill 3459 and our desire to sync up the statutes with the published guidelines?
Thank you. I think that's your invitation for questions. Are there any? I think we'd very much like to see the dash one amendment, and but I appreciate your succinct and useful introduction to the bill.
All right. Thank you much, Mr. Chairman. We'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you. The only person signed up to be heard today is Douglas Schmidt, our long-suffering assessor. Thank you for coming yet again.
Yeah, it just so happens I was in Salem anyway, so I love it here and decided to come on by. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. Douglas Schmidt, Polk County Assessor, testifying on behalf of the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. We're neutral on the bill. It's another exemption that we would administer just like any other bill. There'd be application. They'd have to provide documents, the whole thing, showing they're meeting the requirements. In the dash one that I saw, there were a couple of terms that we would maybe like to see defined a little bit better. It just talks about animal shelter. That may be a common understanding of what that is, but there's no indication. Is that a structured nonprofit animal shelter? It talks about welfare of animals, and this is in the dash one, so it's different than the wording in the current bill that you probably aren't seeing. Talks about welfare of animals, that the proceeds go to organizations that deal with welfare of animals, and not quite sure what that means. I think I know what they intend it to be, but again, it just opens up, like I keep saying, we look for clear, bright lines when we try and qualify property. And then there's also another phrase in there in the dash one that says aiding domesticated animals in emergency or dangerous situations. Again, not quite sure what that would mean. I think I know what it means. I think what they're trying to get at. That would be the only thing that we would just look for, is a little more clarification in some of the language and intent of what it's trying to do. We think we know. Obviously, they're trying to help animals, and that's no problem with that. We just want to make sure that we're getting the exemption to the right people. If you have any questions, I try and answer them.
Questions? Thank you so much. Can we ask you to touch base with Representative Gomberg and see if he wants to introduce a dash two?
Okay. Okay. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I will. If he chooses to move forward, we would not oppose the dash one in its current form. But I'll touch bases with him.
Thank
see
you.
What he says.
Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Thank you. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3459. It's clear to me that we're not ready for a work session. We haven't got the dash ones in front of us, and there may be even a dash two. So we'll leave that go for today. You're on 2022 also, aren't you? Mazin's on 2022. All right. You ready to work 2022?
Sure.
You okay? All right. Colleagues, we'll open the work session on House Bill 2022. Mazin, while he's coming, let me say that I looked at this bill and saw it as a revelation to me. Things that everyone else in the committee certainly already knows that I did not know, and that is that personal property used in business that happens to be a heavy truck does not pay personal property taxes that help support our schools county governments, city governments, and so forth. I didn't know that until we got to this legislation, which proposes that one particular kind of equipment that it gets to be taxed both ways, both with the weight mile tax and also with the personal property tax, asking for an exception from the personal property tax. I've discussed with Mazin the issue that I raised, which was, well, why is it that these big heavy trucks that are cost a lot of money are not just paying for the highways, but also paying their share of the personal property tax? And the answer, unfortunately, is that the writers of the constitutional amendment requiring the highway fund were extremely competent and made sure that any such tax would have to be paid into the highway fund. So instead of using this bill as a vehicle to significantly expand the personal property tax, I've concluded that we probably ought to go ahead with the bill as written. So that's my long soliloquy on why this bill has taken so long for me to get my head around, and why I've mourned the reality that big, heavy vehicles will not pay their share of the costs of other things besides the highways. Mazin, did you want to add anything?
I think, Mr. Chair, you did just fine. Thank you.
All right. Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2022 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves House Bill 2022 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Any objection to the motion? Okay. Motion carries. I assume Representative Nierman would like to carry the bill, so we'll ask him to do that. Close the work session on House Bill 2022. Paula, wasn't it Nierman's bill? Was it Evans' bill?
I thought it was Evans.
Nierman's and Evans.
Oh, was it? Did I have it wrong?
No,
okay.
It's Nierman and Evans.
Nierman and Evans. Well, maybe I should, rather than picking it now, let me consult with them and see who should carry it. Can we do that? Do I have to reopen in order to do that? Okay. All right. Senate Bill 162, is that ready?
Yes.
Yes.
You
okay.
Have all the paperwork. There
all
is
right.
an amendment.
There is an amendment.
It's a technical.
Okay.
Ooh, I bet they're coming in here.
Colleagues, if we are interrupted, we will recess, just so you know.
Recess or stand at ease?
We'll recess if there's a disruption. Otherwise, we'll continue. So let's open the work session on Senate Bill 162. Chris, do you want to talk about that bill?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 162 touches on two issues, just to refresh the committee's memory. The first piece is a technical issue relating to C corporation tax credits and S corporation tax credits. The Department of Revenue had rulemaking authority to expand or to extend C corporation tax credits to S corporations. What the bill does is removes that rulemaking authority.
Speak up a little. Okay.
What the bill does is it removes that rulemaking authority, but it takes all of the S corporation credits that had been granted that tax credit and puts them in statute. So as of right now, there's no change to the tax credit applicability. If an S corporation was unable to claim a tax credit before this bill, they will continue to be able to claim that tax credit. It just gets it gets added to statute. And that's on the pages 1 and 2 of the bill. So it removes the rulemaking authority but holds all of the S corporations harmless. The other piece, the rest of the bill touches on the Working Family Dependent Care Credit, which was created by the 2015 legislature. Mm-hmm. It just makes a number of policy clarifications. Yeah. And to that, on the theme of clarifications, there is a dash A2, which modifies some language pertaining to the income sourced, income earned in Oregon. The way 162A is drafted, it could be interpreted that somebody who lives, for example, in Portland and works in Vancouver could not claim the credit. So the dash A2 changes that language from income earned in Oregon to earned income taxable by Oregon. So it would include all of the,
okay,
the intent, and that was the policy intent from the legislature in 2015. So there is that A2, and you do have the paperwork for the A2, the revenue and the fiscal are both minimal.
All right. And who brought this bill?
The bill, there were two versions of the bill. One was by House, a committee bill, and that's this one. There was another one put forth by the Department of Revenue. I believe that one was 2054, and that didn't go anywhere. Took a different path.
Well, this we deferred to the Senate on this topic, I think.
Yes.
That's the reason why we have the Senate bill in front of us now.
Correct.
All right. Representative Smith-Warner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to ask the same question about where this came from. I guess I'm a little concerned about, particularly as we continue to work on potential revenue reform and changes in our tax structure, do we really want to enshrine in law these tax credits if we end up moving to a system where maybe some of them are going to phase out anyway? I guess I just, and I apologize again for not having further, giving further lead time. This is, I'm trying to react to these things as they come up. But I was concerned or at least interested to know about kind of whether there is, what the need is for
Thank
this.
Thank you. Let's talk about Chapter 314. I think that may be contained. That may contain the answer. Is that one of the chapters that gets repealed if the or changed, markedly changed if the tax reform bill is adopted?
Part of it would, yes. It deals with some of that, the corporate taxation. And so the credits in here touch on our credits against corporations, and as well as credits that can be claimed by S corporation shareholders. So that part isn't touched specifically by the tax reform, because the personal income tax stays in place. The C corporation tax is what is being discussed as being repealed.
Right.
Okay. And
so if I may.
Please. Uh-huh.
So I guess if we were in a situation where we eliminated the corporate tax, this would, however, make sure that whatever those corporate taxes that were also determined by rule to be claimable by S-corps, those S-corps would still be able to claim them, even if the corporations were no longer being taxed that way, that they were able to claim them. I guess I'm concerned about enshrining some tax credits in law that we don't necessarily want to.
The policy, the ongoing policy discussions with respect to tax reform and the committee is still delving into that. There is the issue of how to handle the legacy tax credits. So under a scenario where the corporate excise tax, corporate income tax goes away and gets replaced by a commercials activities tax, there is the outstanding issue of tax credits that those C corporations could have claimed. They're still allowed those tax credits. And in the draft versions of the bill that you heard this morning, there is language that at least acknowledges that as an issue. I don't know that there is complete agreement yet on how that would be carried out. None of that affects the sunsets for those given tax credits.
Right.
And the policy options are many on how that can be handled in terms of just changing them from a credit against the income tax to a credit against the commercial activities tax, and letting those tax credits run out their policy clock, if you will, versus some other change to allow them to be claimed over 1, 2, 3 years just to clean the slate, if you will.
Right.
Those are policy discussions that I think are still ongoing. There is an acknowledgement that it is one of the issues on our to-do list.
Thank you.
Finally, if I may. The working family dependent care credit, I know that was the result of a lot of good hard work by the policy committee. I know Representative Kenny Geyer did a lot of work on that, and I see that there are some technical, the A2, does that have to do with, when it says that it's a mix of technical fixes and policy clarifications, I'm assuming that the technical fixes are on the working family dependent care, and I guess how important is it to get those through in order to help the department to be able to administer that tax in the most efficient way?
Let's get an answer from the department. It's been a while since we heard this bill, so some of this may be repetition.
Cooper. For the record, my name is Lois Williams with the Oregon Department of Revenue. In response to your questions, Chair Barnhart and Representative Smith-Warner, the department did bring these issues forward. As you know, 2015 brought in the Working Family Household Independent Care Credit, completely replacing the former Working Family Child Care Credit and the Child Independent Care Credit. So pieces of both of those came together, but the more we wrote rules around them, the more we did forms and instructions and started doing taxpayer education to raise awareness and to assist people, we started finding that there were some technical items that we wanted to bring forward that are of a policy nature. So, for example, the fact that a single person who was not married could not claim the credit, but one of a married spouse could. Some of the other areas were putting together an interrelationship with people who had cafeteria plans, those people who under the federal law could have a flexible spending account for child care, can have to reduce their child care expenses by that amount. But in the Working Family Household Independent Care Credit for Oregon, they were allowed to use both that, those amounts, plus their actual expenses paid. So in essence, they were doubling up. So to tighten that up a little bit and be clear and to tie to the feds, we asked for a limitation on that. We also wanted to clean up the wording around the age of the youngest child so that it also was consistent with the federal. And then the real issue that affects the A2 amendment is clarifying that a taxpayer needs to have earned income, but it needs to be taxable by Oregon. And so in the example that we talked about last week and then that Chris reiterated today, we have people who are Oregon residents who want to claim this credit, but they just happen to work outside of Oregon. Their earned income is from a non-Oregon source, so we wanted to make a technical fix to get that wording corrected as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I think to get back to your earlier question, if I read the bill correctly, there's a reference directly to other ORS sections which contain sunsets. Is that right?
Correct.
So if that's true, then we're not enshrining anything. We're simply putting into the statute the rulemaking that otherwise would have been in the department. And when one of these tax credit sunsets, according to the other statute, it simply disappears, even without any change in this statute. Have I got that?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for the department? Anything else? Representative Marsh?
Question. Thank you, Chair. So can you verify the tax credits that are being added in statute are already being extended to S corporations? Is that correct?
Most of them already are being extended to S corporation shareholders.
So we're giving you some cover, essentially, by putting them in statute, because you've done this through rulemaking.
That's correct. Over the years, there has been some ambiguity about whether the credits are or not intended, and so we put some information in our rule. And just to make it very clear where the authority to do that comes from, we ask that they be put into statute.
Gotcha.
So they're in rule now?
Many of them are.
Are there any that are not? Which ones are not?
One was already included in the statute, the Low-Income Community Jobs Initiative. And there is an alternative fuel vehicle contribution credit that was not in our rule, but that we've asked that it be added to the statute.
So that's in the boldface somewhere.
It's on line 19, page 2.
Oh, there it is. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Any other questions for the department? All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, I'm going to hold this over till Monday and give you a chance to do some further work on it. I'm getting some, see, we're not ready yet today. So let's close the work session on Senate Bill 162. Colleagues, what we have up for tomorrow are Representative Smith's bills having to do with the rural enterprise issues. There are additional amendments to consider, so we don't have anything scheduled, anything on the schedule that I'm willing to to move yet for tomorrow. I expect one of those bills to move, but I think we want to get it finished first. And we don't have anything on the calendar for Thursday yet. That's not to say there won't be, but there isn't anything yet. So be aware, we will meet Thursday morning with the tax reform, Joint Committee on Tax Reform. I do expect there will be a meeting on Friday at 1 o'clock with the Tax Credit Committee, but stay tuned on that. That depends on the production of some amendments that we have not fully thought through yet. So it may depend on that. Although there may be other things that we can do on Friday in the Tax Credit Committee, if it is possible to move that meeting to an earlier day, so that you'll have Friday afternoon without other responsibilities, I will do that. I don't believe there is a way of doing that right now, but if it turns out there is, I will, and we'll let you know. All right. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. Committee's adjourned.